dudettes, Major League Butt Kicking is back in town.
Oh yeah!
Jesus Christ, just that whole thing. Do we have to do?
Nope, it's going to just be Hunter going, God damn it. I meant listeners.
All right. Welcome to Discussions. We turn 8 tonight, much like our mental age. Once again, it's in the queue where we watched DC Legends of Tomorrow and Get the Gringo. James is here. He can't think of anything better to do.
Yeah, that's true.
Hunter the Boy Wonder.
Hello.
Just a hello, huh? Nothing else?
All right. After I've joined the podcast, I decided to go to church more often.
There you go. And Adam, the Bob Ross of podcasts, paint us a picture with words.
Anybody feel like a skinned bull's face in a wheelbarrow? I could eat.
Oh, yeah. I see what you did there. Well played.
I'm not just spilling this stuff out. There's a point for all this.
There's a method to my madness. All right, so where are we going to start? We DC Legends, or should we go Get the Gringo?
Let's start with Get the Gringo.
All right.
You mean the good one? Let's start with the good one.
Start on a positive note. All right.
All right, so what was your takeaway, James?
Creeped out because Mel Gibson can still make good movies.
Hell yeah, right?
Why are you creeped out? I mean, it's awesome to see his triumphant return. Was that his
Dude,
first?
A little bit of a break from the bottle, and he comes back with just a vengeance, man. He's got some good stuff he's cranking out.
Was that his first one back after he had his meltdown?
I don't know. It was 2012 when he did it, so it could very well be.
Really? Was that long ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, after
watching. I really wish I'd seen it when it came out at this point.
Yeah, I know, right? 4 years ago, and it just now hits Netflix. Like, I guess it didn't do too hot in the big screen or anything, but I'm hearing lots of good things, and now seeing it for myself, really quite pleased.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if it's coming on the heels of his recorded phone calls and racist outbursts, I can see why people wouldn't flock to the theater to see it. What about you, Hunter?
I liked it. It's a bit different from the movies I usually watch, you know, a bit more violent and gritty. But
what do you usually watch? When Hunter goes to the movies, what does Hunter watch? Our viewers want to know.
I mean, mostly comedies. Action comedies, not really violent.
It's good use
things.
Of your time. Yeah.
Yeah, I think. I like to think so.
So what you're saying is we're slowly poisoning you.
That's the gist of it.
You're like
hopefully
a
church balances it out.
In general.
You're like a Chinese emperor and we're your medicine men and we're just prescribing you mercury because that'll make you live forever.
You're just a haberdasher with a good heavy dose of mercury.
Why'd you crack open that thermometer? Just drink. You will live forever.
Can't argue with that. Oh.
What'd you think, Adam?
I interjected enough. Really great. I actually really liked it. I wouldn't five-star it just because there were some technical issues and some acting choices by some of the secondary cast that was a little off. But in general, it was a surprise, and I was very pleased by it. I'll tell you what was really weird for me was that it was, like, as much as I was enjoying it, it felt really long, but it was only an hour and 36.
I mean, okay. I watched it on the right after pushing the eject button on DC Legends of Tomorrow. So it,
which we'll get to.
Yeah, so it didn't feel too long for me, but yeah, there were some weird issues with it.
Okay, actual criticism time here. I did enjoy
the
movie. It had some weird pacing, because all this tension's building, kid's gonna get his liver taken out for the evil warlord of the prison, right? And that's getting worse and worse and worse. And we keep cutting back to Mel Gibson, like, making phone calls and pretending
just
to be Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, okay. I see what you mean by long now. Yeah, that whole segment was cool. It's just, it was weird.
It's cool.
I would rather them just stayed in the El Pueblito.
Well, it's like he killed the guys who were following him, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those are the people who were going to kill him after he did the job, right? Or did I misread that?
No, I think that's it.
That's my interpretation.
So why didn't he just immediately turn around and go, well, I'm going to go kill Javi now?
I think Frank was still going to try and catch him, you know, with the money, even after he killed Javi.
Right, so he decides to go up and kill the fucking guy who's kind of after him. Mickey Mouse complicated series of events that were a delight to watch. Like, if that's what he's doing, then he's sitting there going, well, they could come in here and cut out that kid's liver at any time. They'll probably kill the mom when they do it. But I got some baggage up north I gotta take care of first.
That was stuff that was gonna end up haunting him. And I really thought that, you know, if he's gonna go on this bloody war path, he's just going to put all his eggs in a basket and chuck it off a cliff, which, you know, is a smart decision if you're a, you know, ranger sniper, which I really enjoyed the fact that they didn't overplay the whole ranger thing.
Yeah,
they could have very easily gone, all right, let's get into it. American porn. Everybody get your pants around your ankles. No, this was like he shot his rifle twice. And you didn't even hear the big kaboom or the splatter. It was just like really understated underneath some music. And I was like, well played.
What a beautiful scene. It's moved me.
Right?
It's
gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. No, it did have some problems. I just thought everything was drenched in sweat. And I understand that that's part of like how they filmed it, where they filmed it, the storyline. People are drenched in sweat. But I was just, God, the whole movie, I'm like, I want to go take a bath.
I felt the same way really about Gangs of New York, honestly.
Oh, God, yeah, right?
Well, you're that, sitting there going, okay, yes, it's accurate, but man, everybody is greasy looking.
So dirty.
Although, I did like, every time we had an internal monologue from Mel Gibson was a great scene.
Yes, yes. Which reminds me, can you guys name other movies where Mel Gibson is just really lit into the whole internal monologue? What Women Want?
I can't.
Maverick?
Did he do it?
Payback?
Or no, sorry. Payback.
I don't think
yeah.
it ran. That was Payback.
Payback.
That
okay.
he did that in.
Okay, I can't yeah. remember if he. This movie felt very similar to Payback.
Here's the thing, Dave, and you may be making this comment. So if you are, go ahead and make the comment. Otherwise, I'll do it. Unofficially, never been like never the stamp of approval on it. It's a Payback sequel. Known as Driver, and in Payback, he's known as Porter, just a single name. So in this one, he never even gives his name. It's just Driver. The only name he does give is the name of the dude that screwed him over and took his wife. Killer
Reginald,
deal.
Reginald, right?
I've got this yeah. recurring dream.
Reginald T. Barnes, I think. Yeah. So yeah, it's kind of an unofficial sequel. He even tells the whole plot line of, you know, my girl went with my ex-partner who screwed me over. Like, it's the same thing that his character did. And, but except the only thing is in Payback, he was Marine Corps, I think, USMC. And in this one, he was Army Ranger. So I don't know if maybe he, like, fudged with his identity or if maybe they wrote this movie as a direct sequel. And then afterward, when they figured it wouldn't work, they just changed a few things. But it felt very much like he was playing the same character, which I didn't mind at all. It fit really well.
But you gotta love those convenient dirt ramps right next to border walls.
Yeah, but the tracks, the million car tracks in the field from take after take after take that they didn't even bother to hide.
We can't afford anyone to rake these dirt tracks back out. Let's just go for it.
It's just like, I'm like, wow, they're following previously laid out tracks in the middle of a dirt field. Does this happen a lot? Are they constantly chasing people next to the fence?
Also, must. For a moment, can we talk about the consulate guy?
The big, the giant fat dude?
Oh, Butterballs.
Butterball.
Thank you, yes. Do we want to get right on Butterballs? Go ahead.
Yeah, let's talk about him for a sec, because he's like the reason all those people got murdered, right? He sold out Mel Gibson's location to the guy from America who was after him, literally yes. just because I don't like his face.
Well, he wanted money.
He wanted fetish money.
Yeah, he needed to feed girls chilies and then have them wax his back hair.
Oh my God, that's just what, giant what? Leaps toward Rule 34 in real life. I don't know what he's doing.
Sadly, I don't have a hairy back, so I can't try it and report back.
That whole scene happened. I'm sitting there going, "What the fuck?"
Also, as that scene ends, he's like, make them squeal, and they have the hot sauce bottle, and it cuts away, and I couldn't decide where it was going, either down south going... or in the eyes.
Right? I was torn between, because the bottle's right there, they're holding his forehead back, his eyes are rolling back and forth, you're like, that's going in his eyes, but then the bottle goes south, and you're like, wait.
And then he just screams for a little bit through the tape. So, yeah, they hot sauced his junk.
Okay, we've cleared that mystery up.
Okay with that.
All right, we're done with the podcast. We got the important bit.
Also, the movie opened up with the clowns driving a car getting chased by cops. I was like, this is such a better beginning than DC Legends of Tomorrow. I'm in it. And then he coughs up that blood and that slow motion just, and he's so pissed too because he knows it's going to get all over him. But he just hacks that crap up, getting chased by the cops. And I really did appreciate that even though there was that Deus Ex dirt ramp, that he didn't just do this freeze frame jump over the fence Dukes of Hazzard
right?
style.
Yeah. Oh, those Duke boys are at it again.
That didn't happen. Through the fence. Like, it did not work out for him.
His car just knifed right through the fence? Like, why did he even need the dirt ramp? Why didn't he just drive through it? Because it looks like it was made of cardboard. Just
I don't know if maybe the supports were too close together, and so that's why he went through it sideways. I don't know. I didn't double check to see, but yeah, he definitely tried the ramp, and that didn't work out.
Also, the bunch of money being in the trunk was kind of predictable. I saw that one coming from the moment they were like, leave it, but it's against procedure, leave it!
Yeah, you'd think they would check the trunk for more stuff. I guess the first $2 million really stole the show.
And I liked how the film just throws you in the middle of it. There was no backstory explanation, like here's the movie.
Yeah, where did you get the money? Who's the other clown? They didn't bother with that shit.
After the other thing we watched, this was like, oh yes, there is none of this. It's all streamlined. Every second is, aside from the weird trip up north and then coming back down.
Lots of prison stuff, and I guess they hired a dude that just basically researched that prison, and that's why there was so much detail on it and so much camera work inside and so much this is how it works in here, because he wanted to show, like, I researched this, man, so this is going in the movie.
Yeah, on the surface, or if you're not familiar, that prison seems super ridiculous and not real, but it's totally a real prison. Like, I just...
Yeah.
And it's funny, it's one of those weird, we live in a simulation moments watching this, because a few, like, maybe a week or so ago, one of my secret shames is I like to watch a good prison documentary, you know, like the locked up...
I watched the same one.
And I'm like, and I watched that episode, and then we watched this. I'm like, holy shit, it's that prison. I mean, it was played up a little bit for the movie, but for the most part, it was pretty accurate to that
Hoppy's
particular
room,
prison.
Really.
Oh, yeah, where he takes him in there, and like, here's the $5, you get a closet with a curtain.
But did you, in the UK and in IMDb, this is known as How I Spent My Summer Vacation, aka Get the Gringo. That's the name of this movie.
All right. How I Spent My Summer Vacation. I guess we've been doing summer vacations wrong.
If you're not having a story to tell in a report at the beginning of school after this, then you're doing it wrong.
I didn't even get malaria or any kind of STD.
Well, that's because you didn't go into the field of sex tents.
Oh, my God. Just as far as the eye can see, just fuck tents everywhere. just a shaking and a moving. Holy cow.
Just a chorus a-coming.
And I love his voiceover as he's walking through just the field of arms. He's like, is this a prison or is this the world's shittiest mall? Just shops everywhere. Just people knifing each other.
And he's got cigarettes in his ears to block out the mariachi music that's been playing all day.
Right? I loved that. And he knew he was going to get his whooping. The way he dealt that size 12, oh, is it 11? Right across that guy's face. And then he just beat the rest of it.
It just
he was small for you.
I've been fighting wrong. I need to put shoes on my hands and feet punch people more.
Sweet move, though, on the guy in the toilet.
Oh, my God, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, that was brilliant.
Yeah, that was probably my favorite scene in the movie. She's like, oh, man, he's going to get into this epic bathroom fight. It's going to be like Jason Bourne. Man, how's he going to do this? Nope, just snatches the dude forward and knocks him out with the rim of the toilet bowl, which makes total sense, and I've never seen that
total
in a movie
sense.
Ever. And it would work 100%, I'm pretty sure.
And that's what I appreciated about that, was because I'm like, I didn't have to suspend any disbelief, because I'm like, nope, if some dude snatched me out of the bottom of a stall like that, my head would hit the toilet. And I'd be out, guaranteed. That is legit. That's happening.
And then
he grabs.
Yeah, the voiceover as he's grabbing the gun out of the commode, just making vomiting voiceover noises.
Just that. It's the shittiest gun. Just ugh. Then it bothered me for the next 5 minutes. I'm like, wash your hands. Wash your hands. They're like prepping food. I'm like, no, don't eat with poop hands. Wash them, please.
Remember, listeners, eating with poop hands is a crappy idea.
Yeah. I kept waiting for him to like rub his eyes because they're tired. And I'm like, oh, you're going to get pink eye.
You're going to get hepatitis A through Z.
Okay, so all of that leading up to the introduction of the kid, right? And can I just say, knocked it out of the park. This kid. I have his name here. It's Kevin Hernandez. So a very comfortable and very natural actor. He was 13 when they made the movie. Played a 10-year-old, so not a huge age gap. But
yeah, not too noticeable.
I didn't see a single moment with him on where he looked like he was reading from a cue card or he was just reciting something. Like, he looked like he fully committed and believed in his dialogue.
Yeah, it's real hard for – I mean, or it's real easy for a kid actor to kind of tank a movie with a wooden performance a la Jake Lloyd. But
right. It is pod racing.
But yeah, he did a great job. I'm not – that was where the film took a weird split for me. Like, when I was watching, like, oh, man, he's going to use his crazy, ingenious mousetrap-level smarts to take this gang apart. And then they throw you the curveball of the kid and the wife and that whole angle. I don't know – I mean, I enjoyed it, but I don't know if I would have enjoyed just a regular straight movie more where it's just him in the prison doing his awesome plans and things without the whole – kid and wife aspect.
It worked what they did, and I enjoyed what they did. I mean, they could have definitely taken it a different way and been, I think, just as good. Why they decided on the kid angle, or maybe
kid angle gives the movie a little more depth. Whereas if it was just him going around killing people, it would be a really fun movie to watch, and it would be the same guy at the end of the movie.
Yeah, that's true.
The problem is that's basically what we got with Olympus Has Fallen and London Has Fallen.
The mom and the kid weren't prisoners. Oh, wait, never mind. The mom was. I forgot.
Yeah.
But why didn't she just be like, drugged. Get out of here, kid.
He wasn't allowed to leave either. He asked him, are you a prisoner here? No, I'm 10. Well, why don't you go to school? I'm special.
Kept around by the bad guy, but couldn't he just walked out?
No, they wouldn't have let him. They were constantly keeping an eye on him.
You had to go out through the security checkpoints, through the guards. They would have turned him back around.
Also, I have to say, one of my cringy scenes was in this movie. It gets me every time. And that is when someone takes an iron to the face or the head.
That gets you, huh?
It's up there with watching Curb Stomps from American History X. Just something about people taking irons to the face or the head weirds me out. It's like your shaky people fear.
Just that inner cringe that goes, oh, that's that again.
It's the fear of the unknown, tell you, because I've never ironed.
Just a fear of that device. You don't understand it.
What is this thing? This dark artifact?
Do you only wear wrinkly clothes? Are those the only clothes you can trust?
Well, no, I'm not a savage. Just people do my ironing for me.
The kid's mom, hell of an actress, and not classically beautiful, but whatever B camera team was in charge of just filming her silhouette with the light behind her, hats off to you. Have a cigarette, because that was amazingly well done. And then she catches Driver looking at her, and then just fucking decks him. Just, no, you don't get to look at me.
Just punches him. I've had a bad night. Punch
and she made it very believable when she was being assaulted, a la the attempted rape scene.
Yeah, that was good.
Super uncomfortable. Uncomfortable just city. Like it's supposed to make it. How about that shower? Did that look dirty enough to give you athlete's foot for the rest of your life?
Oh, yeah. You've caught all the things. I like how he just gets in with his clothes on. Like, he's just like, I have.
Right? I'm not even going to bother.
These need to be washed as well.
It's all that dirt sweat. Just
what I liked about the kid, actually, was that that ending scene where the mom was being tortured and she sees the kid walking up. She's crying. Yeah, and I'm thinking, oh no, this kid is going to give himself up to save his mom, kind of, you know, bargain for the mom's life. And then he's just like, here's your liver, and stabs himself. I thought that was...
I did not see that coming. And I was like, whoa, well played, kid.
And not like once either. Like, he just goes full on sewing machine on his liver. Like, summoning the willpower to stab yourself once is bad enough, but to go in like...
As a child.
Yeah, okay. Two more times. Yeah.
That actually brings me up to my other criticism of the movie. They didn't use traditional blood packs for any of the bullet shots or the stabbing scenes. It was CG'd on wounds and blood, and it was really obvious when it happened.
That's the latest.
Not as obvious as London Has Fallen.
No, not that bad, but that's like the bottom of the scale.
Right.
Yeah, it's
like
new,
that's how we measure things now.
It's the new trend. It must be cheaper than
I honestly think it's
squibs.
The way, yeah. I think it's the way they're going now. They're just going to get more and more like this, and hopefully they get it better and better. But yeah, I think he really did a number on that scene with like the first stick with that piece of sharpened rebar or whatever it was. And he starts screaming right after the first hit. And then he keeps going, which I thought really sold the realism of it. It's like, oh, you thing. And then he collapses after three stabs. And he's like, he just couldn't keep going.
But, how many licks does it take to get to the center of a liver?
One, that's one, a tough question.
Two, three.
Hey, prof to the kid for taking a stab at it.
Oh. Die a little inside. How'd you avoid the shootout at the OK Corral?
God. So, okay, question. Are they innocent bystanders if everyone's a criminal in prison? They're all getting shot.
Some of them were families that lived
with the criminals. There were some women that were getting shot. You don't know if they were there like the kid's mother who had they'd also committed something, but I would imagine that some of those were family members. But holy crap, everybody got shot a million times.
And I like how they just keep going. Like the one dude's like, oh, he's shot me clearly in the neck and in the chest and in the stomach and the arm and the leg and probably other places that the camera's not showing, but I'm going to keep shooting.
And I'm going to chuck this grenade at you.
And he just jumps up and grabs it and throws it back.
That marks two movies I've seen this year where someone has the grenade return perk on Hacksaw Ridge. He jumps through the air and then kicks the grenade back. He punts it back. So it's 26. Oh, that was all. Yeah, that's also a Mel Gibson movie.
So I've decided that junkyard would have been the location of the most violent slug bug game ever played.
Oh my god!
There would have been bodies on the ground. Bodies would have hit the floor.
Sibling relationships would have been ended. Permanent arm damage.
So much patricide.
Why can't you lift your arm more than like 30 degrees? Well, you see, there's an impound yard in Mexico. We had the misfortune of going there to buy a car once. We call it the Art of a Thousand Fists. And we didn't call no slug backs. It became a vicious cycle.
As he's screaming like that one girl from Sin City, she made me watch! He didn't call no slug bags! So I decided that between this movie and Apocalypto, Mel Gibson loves subtitles.
Yeah.
Guys, he adores them.
I love a good subtitle, too. Although I think there's room for clever alternatives. Like, I really like the Tom Cruise German movie. You're getting terrible with names tonight.
It's he plays a Nazi.
Where they start in German and then it just kind of naturally transitions over to English, which was kind of cool.
Yeah, I like that in they did the same thing with the Russians and Sean Connery in Hunt for Red October. In on his mouth and then all of a sudden he's speaking English and they zoom back out. I'm like, oh, I love that transition. So right. When they're interrogating the two cops in the chairs, they've got them all taped up. Say, we bought cars and hookers. We bought him shoes and tacos. That's all.
As he's just pruning his toes.
He's just so earnest. He's like, and tacos. We bought the hookers tacos. Let me go.
Who are you? That's my money. It just shoots the computer.
And the sound kept going. I loved that. He didn't shoot the hard drive or the circuitry. Like, he put a bullet through the screen, and the sound kept coming out. Yeah. I'm like, thank you. He didn't just explode the computer. It could have, but like it clearly went through it like it didn't hit any vital organs, and that was still functional. I liked that.
Also, all you need to impersonate Clint Eastwood is a prostitute, a payphone, and a little handkerchief.
He's a soft Peter Stormare, who's in like everything you've ever seen. I thought that was his best American accent to date, given that he's Swedish. He played Frank.
I had no idea he was Swedish.
And I thought this, he normally has almost such a garbled accent you can hardly understand him, but this was, I think, his best.
Here, put this, put these socks in your mouth and then head out to set.
Right in the cheeks of your mouth, Dom DeLuise, and do the Godfather.
Another memorable scene that I liked was the final part in the surgery room with the doctor who pretends to have them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Where she's got the gun.
Kind of hard to decide.
Yeah.
And yeah.
That she's double crossing him, and then she double crosses the other people.
Yeah, it was a quadruple cross.
Pretty strong women in this movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The mom, the doctor.
Yeah. I was nurse. Pleasantly surprised.
All the ladies in the tents.
So brave.
Can anyone remember seeing ever in a movie a woman being electrocuted for torture?
I have not. The first time, I think, that's been shown.
Yeah, it was, again, she was a great actress, really did it well, and it made me uncomfortable.
I mean, I guess, unless you count Hostel.
I've not seen Hostel.
You should,
and that was
man.
Just torture porn. That wasn't to get any information out of her.
Oh, yeah. But you should definitely watch it. I mean, wait till like next Sunday. It'll be a nice Sunday afternoon. Make a nice brunch. Sit down with your wife. Pop in some Hostel.
Call up Hunter on the Sabbath. Watch a little Hostel.
Yeah. And then follow okay. that up. And then follow that up with Open Water. And you'll have a great weekend.
And another Frozen, where they're on top of the ski lift. Just...
I did not see that one because
I haven't either. But somebody posted, I think it was on Reddit. They're like, "My niece has been dying to watch Frozen, so we're gonna watch this together." you're a horrible human being.
Yeah, I swore off those kind of movies after I watched Open Water. I'm like, I love sharks and disaster movies. Let's go. Oh, why does my now I have a migraine and I don't feel as hopeful about life as I did before those 2 hours. What's that?
So
these characters are awesome and you care about them for 2 hours. Now they're shark poop.
The spoons, which is the levers on the grenades. The spoons on the two grenades that he throws had blue coloring. So blue indicates a training or dummy grenade. So they didn't unpaint them. I guess maybe the prop master was like, nah, we're leaving the paint on.
Well,
we don't want to have a throw incident here.
Well, only Loremaster Adam would have caught that. I had no idea.
I've done my research. IMDb, Wikipedia, little website here and there. I just put this shit together.
He's like, I have all 36 volumes of the Anarchist Cookbook. I mean, I love America.
That umbrella was a sweet-ass touch.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It was very much Avengers, like the old British Avengers. Like it was that kind of style where he's like, yeah, you never know when you're going to need an umbrella. And he walks out. I'm like... Okay, I have to suspend a little bit of disbelief, but well done, sir. That was just an awesome moment. That was a very Bond moment.
You care about getting your suit wet, but you have toilet hands and you didn't wash it when you were in sweaty prison?
That should have been the ending of the movie, him at like a doctor. And he's like, oh, yep, you've got 16 different diseases. You've been washing your hands recently.
And then it just zooms in on his silent face and the horror in his eyes, and then it goes to credits.
He's like... biting his fingernails during that scene, and he's like, oh, God.
Like, get your hands out of your mouth. Good God, man.
He's just a thousand-yard stare, and then some music builds under the scene. Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Suicide is painless.
Yes.
So the last scene where he wakes from the dream in the hammock, is that dream or premonition? Because he was having that dream. Did he just have the dream again, or was he having a premonition the entire time? And at the end, that last dream, did that actually come true? Because the one dude was in a neck brace and we had seen him previously. Remember when he was telling the dream to the kid's mother about, you know, having the recurring dream?
Yeah.
The two guns gun down that dude and she drops a coffee pot.
I'm going to go premonition.
I'm going to go dreaming.
Hunter?
I'll go with dreaming. Yeah.
See, and I was going with premonition. Looks like we're tied up on this one. We're going to have the viewers, Hunter. The viewers are going to have to weigh in and cast their vote. Whether or not the top falls over, or does it keep spinning?
Uh-huh.
Welcome to the podcast of tomorrow. You can view it with your ear eyes.
All right, we're near that 40-minute mark. You guys want to transition to DC Legends of Tomorrow?
Let's change.
Fuck, man, we really don't though.
Let's change.
I have all the notes ever on this.
So
God.
Let's change positions and one that's less comfortable for everybody, like the back of a Volkswagen Beetle, and.
Small rats.
Yes. What? You're on fire, sir. And let's talk about DC Legends of Tomorrow, which is James's fault. But I guess before we before we leave that, everyone should watch Get the Gringo. It's in your Netflix. You all have Netflix. There's no excuses. Watch it. You'll thank yourselves.
Recommended.
A Field of Sextants. All right, now let's talk about DC Legends of Tomorrow. Which is James's fault, by the way. Which, I mean, sure, I inflicted London Has Fallen on him, but I don't know if this was equal.
First off, I suggest both of these, and you said it was a good idea, so half this blame is yours.
That is true. I had no idea. I learned it from watching you, Dad.
I had no fucking idea either. This is not a dad-son situation. This is two idiot teenagers who took their dad's car for a joyride, and now they're at the bottom of a gorge.
DC Legends of Tomorrow, pilot episode, Bottom of the Gorge.
All right, so let's just go through it, and how far did everyone make it? I'll start. I lasted 12 minutes and 43 seconds of episode one before I checked the fuck out.
13 minutes and 6 seconds.
What about you?
That's kind of weak, guys. I got through 3 episodes.
What is wrong with you? Are you Sam Neill and In the Mouth of Madness?
Oh, I think they, at the third episode, they made a reference to Clue Clue Land, so I'm pretty happy about that. That's what kept me going.
Pretty sure.
You know, the thing is, we'll never know if he's lying.
Yeah, I'm not checking. Right? What about you, Adam? How much of
At the end of my notes, I'm typing up notes on Heatwave, and I just wrote, fuck it, done, 6 minutes into part two. Like, I watched all of part one, and I just could not do it anymore.
Yeah, I called to make sure people would watch things for the podcast. I call up Adam. I'm like, hey, what are you up to? Just watching some DC Legends of Tomorrow. Oh, how far did you make it? I'm in episode two right now. Oh, shit, bro. Stop that shit immediately. Stop watching it. And he was just like, oh, thank God.
I'm like, oh, I'm going to do Get the Gringo now. Good. Somebody shoot somebody and hit them. Oh my God, all the misses ever.
I just want them to shovel everything DC universe wise into a grave of ET cartridges, bury it, and start over. Oh my God.
This episode, I'm going to let you, I'm sorry, Davey, edit that out. I'm going to let you run this show. Go ahead. Do your thing.
It was unwatchable. So bad. I started last night because I'd been playing video games all week and procrastinating. I'm like, these things will be fine. I'll watch them. And so at like 2 o'clock in the morning, we wrap up playing some Mass Effect 3 multiplayer. I'm like, well, let's watch DC Legends of Tomorrow before I go to sleep. That was a bad idea. So and it starts very promising.
Kept you awake. Nightmares.
Okay, you shut the fuck up, Dave. It starts very promising.
I mean,
no, it does not.
In 2022, when the Time Masters gather to defeat the Immortals. Are you fucking kidding me?
Let me elaborate.
It opens up with the subtitles, Laser Blasts.
By starts promising, I mean the first 5 seconds. That opening shot, I'm like, okay, this seems all right. I mean, it's a nice, large, wide shot. And there's some explosions that don't look too bad, and then it's all down immediately. Just drop off. Ocean floor, Mariana Trench, right after that opening shot.
David warned you. It says London's under attack. Again, we're back to London, and it's
London
under attack.
So
it's going to be awful.
You know what's even better? You know what it said? It's London 2122 during the second blitz.
2166, wasn't it? The second blitz?
Whatever fucking date it was, during the second blitz!
The second. There was a blitz before this, and I don't care to know what it was about.
No, the first blitz was Germany! In World War II! Hey, right out the gate, who's ready for some Nazi references? Because this guy, he is literally future Hitler.
Well, they even say that, actually, with
a name
Hunters.
Like Vandal Savage. How could
he not
be?
First dialogue out of the gate. Vandal Savage. I mean,
both bad words.
McConquer or like Hopebreaker Bloodthirsty. Just something quintessentially villainous. Yeah.
Orphan
like
Crippler.
I'm evil bad guy. How's it going?
I am Orphan Crippler.
It's like he's like the role-playing group, and he's that player. Everyone else is like, they come up with these sweeping names that are realistic and make sense, and then like, I'm Vandal Savage! No!
Like, oh, God.
Steve, you can't be Vandal Savage. Why not? That's my name. I come from a long line of proud savages.
and his proud henchman murders a mother in front of her son, like, right away. So you're like, okay, so we've established this is a bad guy, but not bad enough.
I like how James picked two things that both involved people getting spat on in the face. That was a nice touch.
Oh my God. Okay. Did that not feel weird to you guys? The kid spits in the dude's face. A kid who at that age can't even begin to comprehend the concept of defiance in the face of tyranny. But he must have seen one of his parents do it. So he just mimics it, spits on the dude just right in his face, and then the guy's like, yeah, you take care of your mother, and then shoots the kid.
Well, London 26 is a hard-edged world. A lot of kids spitting on people in the faces.
Getting promptly murdered for it by the guy who, I'd like to draw attention to this, can regenerate from a single cell and can only be killed by the two reincarnating bird people.
In the second episode,
this
gets worse.
In the second episode, you find out it's just the girl that can kill him. And then Vandal kills the guy, angel person.
Which will so be back later, right? Spoilers, Hunter. God, I was going to keep watching this.
Sure.
I'm going to throw this out there. If this is a good idea, guys, chime in.
All right.
I want to talk about it chronologically, and then you guys say when you cut out, and then we'll continue on talking about how bad this was.
Sounds good.
Until one by one we all fall, and then Hunter's the last one standing.
Okay.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Let's do this.
So go ahead. So now we're at the Time Masters, all right?
Yeah, we've established. Okay. We've finished the Vandal Savage opening, and then we go to the Temple of Time.
Nobody playing Time Masters.
Stay a while. Listen.
Okay.
Nobody playing Bobby Robb's In Time.
So let's talk about the Time Masters. Let's talk about, if we don't defend humanity, then what are we defending the universe for? Now, maybe my DC lore is rusty, but there is a shit ton of aliens in DC, right?
It's mostly aliens, yes.
Like, there's the Green Lantern Corps, which is, like, the whole known fucking universe. Like, they have their own police. There's the Martians, right? Then there's the Kryptonians. And then, like, Doomsday's got a planet.
Yep.
He's got his own planet.
Then there's just filled with parademons and shit. And just, there's so many aliens. Brainiac literally goes around and collects aliens like Pokemon cards.
And if space is too much, then they have multiple dimensions, and then you have Mr. Mixtaplizix.
The nth dimensional fucking imp dude, right? All this shit. If we don't defend it for the humans, go fuck yourself, Time Masters, you goddamn knockoff Time Lords.
So the dialogue here is like, we are not custodians of humanity, but time, right, Hunter? Time. And then the guy with the extremely manly name of Rip Hunter says to them,
Captain Rip Hunter.
Captain Rip Hunter.
Vandal Savage. Come see Rip Hunter and Vandal Savage in this weekend's all oiled up, all wrestling, all the time cage match. You'll pay for the whole seat, but you'll only need the edge.
It reminds me of Stringfellow Hawk, for those of you that remember Airwolf. Oh my God. So he then turns to them and says, I'm going to appeal to you, not as masters of time, but as humans. Right after they just said, we are not custodians of humanity, but time. So he's really appealing to them. They said, this is how you can appeal to us. And he went, nope. I'm
going
to appeal to you in the exact opposite way. Did they replace a writer mid-sentence? Is that how bad this was?
I imagine.
They couldn't even put the period. They just threw him out the window and escorted a new one in.
All right. So
our master
immediately
became
after
angry with the last writer and had him disintegrated.
Oh. And speaking of Rip Hunter, he's an English guy who travels around time in a spaceship alien object.
Are they clever with their DC Doctor Who? Or as I
like
to call
clever
Doctor Who gives a shit?
You might say that a character is a ripoff.
Yes.
Rip Hunter. I see not only where you got that, but where they got that, undoubtedly. Because that actor was in a Doctor Who episode.
Oh, of course he was.
With of course, sharing screen time with Doctor Who. That's stupid. And so I looked it up because I had to know. And one of the writers, Greg Berlanti, who must be the CW guru, because everything he's written has just been released on the CW, got his start in the late 90s with Dawson's Creek. So I'm not totally surprised, but the rest of this was shit.
For our lives to be over, I want to know, right?
Okay, man, let's move on a little bit here. We're going to talk about the ship now. Because
Yep, the Wave Rider, right?
Oh, whatever the fuck it's called. It's talking in an... And we have the obvious setup where we find out that Rip Hunter's gone rogue. I didn't get that far. I just assume he did, because she asked him how it went at the council, and he said exactly as expected. Why the fuck would you answer like that? Unless you are a crazy person?
Yeah.
Exactly as expected, he said, cackling maniacally and tapping his fingertips together behind his large desk. That's a villain line.
He might be the villain.
That's a Vandal Savage line.
I mean, he did teleport through time and just date rape drug all these other heroes.
All right, but before we get to that, I want to talk a little bit more about the ship, because the inside of it looks like the Starship Andromeda had sex with a roller coaster.
Yeah. Oh, that's so accurate. Oh, my
so
God.
Accurate.
Like, it's just every seat has a weird over-the-head harness. Like, is moving through time rough? Like, is there turbulence? What the fuck does that mean?
Yeah, time
we'll get to that.
Keep all arms and limbs within the vehicle.
Please remain in the time stream at all times.
No food or drink.
Keep your time tray table in its full upright locked in seated position.
You guys remember the name of the female AI?
No.
Gideon, the female AI. Does that make any sense to any of you? Is it in the next two episodes, does that come up at all? Is there an explanation for that, Hunter?
Nope. They just call her or it Gideon.
I mean,
no explanation
was,
about that.
But after watching this, Hunter brain, he suffered a stroke, so he's bleeding in the brain and the parts where this show was imprinted.
Yeah. I've been playing Clue Land to recover.
It's a good recovery.
Okay. So now we move forward, right? He's getting ready to go and secure all his allies. What follows is the worst series of cuts, like rapid-fire cuts I've ever seen in my life.
It must have been 200 scenes in the first, 10 minutes. I'm like, who's this? What's this? Wait, why are we here? Oh, this scene's only 30 seconds? Also, everyone speaks an expositional log. No one speaks like a human being in this show, and it drove me crazy.
Yep.
Actually, it's not true. There was two people who didn't speak in exposition.
I don't believe you.
The fucking Hot and Cold brothers who just robbed
him
of heat and cold technology. Right? They
and
suck
cold
as characters.
And Wave.
Yeah, Captain Cold and Heat Wave. I mean, they suck, right? They're awful characters, but they just like came on screen like, fuck, run from the cop. Like, they were in media res, right? In the middle of action.
Yeah.
And then they just got zapped, and we don't really... Then the other characters talk about them, but we don't hear them just going, I am a criminal, and I will not follow you, for I am one who breaks the law. Now, on the other hand, now,
Rip
also,
Hunter,
what,
superhero
what also,
date rapist.
Jesus. Okay, so he date rapes all of these there so he can tell them about how they need to save the future as opposed to going to Superman or Batman or Supergirl or The Flash or fucking
you know,
even
all
Arrow.
The good heroes.
He didn't even go to Arrow. Like, what is going on with this?
It's
not important. Not important.
I think he may have showed up for the other guys, and then Superman's like, hey, you know, we're powerful and all, but these guys are even more so. You should take them instead. And then after they're gone, everyone's like, yes, all those shitty people that keep trying to superhero with us, and we're non-confrontational, so we won't tell them they suck.
Put a pin in that, because that's actually resolved.
Oh, no.
So Hunter and I will get to that.
Yep.
Okay, so we'll hold off on that. Let's talk about the scene where he shows them the demonic future that awaits them after his grand sweeping speech with his very Shakespearean hand motions to the camera.
Can I mention that he went back in time to, when would you like to go? And he says, January 2016. No date. No just, day. No
pick,
hour.
You pick
just
idiot.
Fucking January. Just, you know, there's like 30 days you can play with 31 of them. Just pick one at random. It's okay with me.
It must be an even day in the evening so I can watch the sunset on the horizon.
Right?
Nothing. So then he shows them this doomed future, right? With the weird little gadget in his hand.
Yeah, the projector thing.
Yeah, for those of you at home paying attention, the projector thing in his hand is in fact a wireless gaming mouse. And the red light coming off of it is literally just the optic from the mouse.
Oh, is that what that is?
Yes.
That's all it was.
Oh my god.
Not even as cleverly disguised as the Lady Razor communicator that we got in the prequels.
Oh, that's fantastic.
With this mouse, I shall show you your future. I saw Optimus Prime do this once.
It was interesting to me when he's talking to all of them. After that giant, worthless montage of him gathering all of these people together who you don't care about if you don't have the CW on TiVo constantly. Everything that they're showing you, because otherwise you're just like, I don't care who
right.
these people are.
Can we
are.
Talk for a second? They're drawing from two shows, right? Just two.
Yeah, Flash and Arrow.
Arrow.
Who the fuck are all these people?
So the freeze gun and the fire duo from Flash. Prison Break.
I know they're from Flash. What about the two people who merge into Fire Demon with the stupid steampunk outfit?
That is also Flash. Flash. Yep.
Should have seen that one coming. Okay, what about the Black Canary, who for some reason is an assassin who doesn't have vocal cord abilities?
Arrow.
I'm guessing
the Black Canary and the White Canary.
Just go fuck yourself, CW. Just straight.
I was on board with those shows early on, and then, man, they ruined them fast. Like, Arrow was really good early season one, and the whole show hangs on this mental weight that he's feeling, because he was this playboy, and he didn't give a shit, and it resulted in his girlfriend getting killed.
Bruce Wayne.
Yeah, and resulted in the death of his fiance. I'm like, oh, man, now he's a hero, and he's got that weight. That's interesting. And then, like, season two comes along, and, like, hey, surprise, stranger that arranged to meet me in a restaurant, and she slides him. It's that scene where, like, we meet in a public place, and I slide you the manila folder. That must be happening in every restaurant all the time.
Right?
We should do that one day. We should just go to a restaurant in suits and then just slide.
Just slide a manila envelope.
And then I'll use
back
my
and forth.
And I'll use my foot and kick you over a briefcase, and then we'll leave, but only after ordering waters, and then just confuse the people. But anyway, so yeah, he's in this restaurant, and she slides him over, and it's surprise, surprise, pictures of his fiance who he thought was dead. I'm like, well, there goes any weight the show had. Fuck you, Arrow. And so I quit. And then I quit Flash because of Captain Freeze and Cold Man.
Yep.
Fire gun. I'm like, this is too
Captain
much.
Captain Cold and Heat Wave.
I'll get to their guns later.
Also, their only power is a gun. How many of those guns are lying around? Don't they just take them away when they get caught? I don't understand.
Maybe they make more?
Oh, I mean, if they made more every time they got arrested, there'd probably be like 30 different guns in like the evidence locker.
I think the cops should start using that shit. Like, that's Captain Cold and Heatwave. Everybody gear up. They've got a whole SWAT squadron.
They keep
marching
out with that shit.
At what point do you just not cut their hands off so they can't build new ones?
Oh my god. So they're on the roof, right?
Yes.
And I don't know if you remember or now that you recall it, because I'm bringing it up again, if you will recall it, but every time he talks to this group of people, he's talking to them dramatically from the side or from behind.
He's constantly
turning around and just talking to the sky so that they can hear him. Like, no, I'm from the future and I need you. And then somebody will come up like into his eye line to talk to him and he turns.
Maybe
and
he's just really autistic and he can't handle direct human eye contact.
That's gotta be it. It's just
a side
the worst.
A side effect of time travel is also severe autism. It's a lot like vaccinations, according to what's her name.
Oh, it's so bad.
Okay.
And that
so then,
is, I think, yeah, that's where...
We had the weird...
Oh, wait, no, I made it to the scene after that, where the two chicks are stick fighting and then speaking in ways that human beings don't speak to each other. Like, I'm going to reveal all of my deepest and most suppressed emotional and darkest fears to you. Yes, you see, after my brother was killed, I couldn't cope, and nobody talks like that.
I'm telling you, even though we're sisters and I've probably been over this several times before.
Many, many times.
And that's where I hit the B button on my controller, and then it thankfully stopped it, and then I texted James, and let me pull my text up. Yes.
I got to get this.
Holy fuck. What the fucking fuck? This is unfucking watchable.
That is exactly what you said.
Oh, man. Then you missed some good stuff, because I'm here to tell you. There's some
gems.
Oh, man. So, Captain, the line was, I'm sure Captain Hunter will return me to the minute I left. Captain Adam Brandon Routh, which just neatly explains away the entire show for anybody invested in any of the other CW properties who don't care to watch this bullshit. They can say, oh, so at some point when this show ends, they will return them all to the point when they left, so we don't care and we don't have to see this. So they're just giving you that warning right out of the gate. Like, yeah, you don't have to watch it. This is all going to get undone.
Do they cover why they... Because it's a time travel movie, and I have a real hard time with time travel movies, the logic of it. Do they explain why not just go back to when this dude was a child and deal with Vandal Savage before he's... Why go through the process of herding up heroes to fight him when they can just go back in time and slip his mom an abortion pill?
They do actually.
Some basic hand-wavium.
Okay.
Techno...
I think it's actually in like the third episode since I watched it. You can only try to kill someone once. Going back again will mess up time for some reason.
How ridiculous reasons. This shit is.
For some reason.
So then they cut to the Hawk people, right? Hawkman and Hawkgirl.
Who have the worst,
easy to remember.
Who have the worst CG wings I've ever seen. It makes the Sci-Fi Network look good.
Oh my god. That's my point, right? So at the very at the end of their dialogue, they're like, we know with this guy. She's like, no, we don't. And he's like, but we really do. And he's like, I know how we'll resolve it. We'll fight each other. And she's like, okay. And so she takes her jacket off, and then they both sprout wings, and they jump at each other with wing power in this tiny little room in like an apartment. And they jump at each other, and you know how you're like 10 feet apart, and then the wires lift you up, and you come at each other in this very posed punch, but then the editor has a stroke or something, so he forgets to cut it at the apex of the jump, and he cuts it too late, so they're already descending down, getting ready to land, right in front of each other without punching, and that's, like, he leaves that in there?
Well, of course he does.
So, yeah, he left, like, a second of the punch too long, and it just ruins everything, and that trope has been overdone.
I guess so, the special effects department decided to wing it.
Oh.
God, you're good at these.
I mean, it the show's chance of success really hinges on a wing and a prayer.
Well, on the other wing, then go to the Marys, right?
I feel like the show is really going to take off.
It's spreading.
They just really need the audience to be the wind beneath their wings.
All right, you know what? This is a fair trade-off. I'm corrupting you guys. You guys are corrupting me a little.
Hey, it's two birds with one stone.
We've descended into
pun madness. So we cut to the
canaries. All right, canaries, yes.
All right.
Canaries are fighting each other. I guess, well, the canary is fighting the other canary. And she says very dramatically, be the white canary. Can't care how bad she says it. I'm like, that means nothing to me. That sounds silly. Like, I could put profanity in front of that, but I don't think it would make it any more serious when I just say, that is silly. I can't emphasize that enough. Be the white canary. No meaning behind that phrase gets through to me.
It's like they tried to make it really dramatic. Like they were a step away from making her go like, be the, turn to camera, white canary.
Also, why are all friends and siblings and relatives just fighting each other constantly? I feel like I've been doing friendship wrong. Like I just need to wait for my wife to come home from lunch tomorrow and just throw her a broom handle and then attack her with the mop.
That's love. That's absolutely love. And then just jump at her and then just come down right in front of her.
Maybe they can't go to therapy without revealing their identity, so they have a lot of pent-up aggression.
So in this horrible travesty of a show, they did attempt to do some actual real comedy, and one of those lines actually came through for me.
Oh.
Captain Cold Heat Wave, right? Awful and awfuler. They're chatting, as they do. And then Captain Cold says, why do we continue to do crime? I forget what he says. And then, why are we criminals? Have you thought about that? Think about why we do this. And Heat Wave says, because we love money and we hate working. That's pretty much it. That's the only line of comedy in this episode that worked for me, and I was like, well done. Way to just call a spade a spade.
Or he just
love money, hate working.
Or you could translate it to because we're millennials.
So then it cuts to the old white guy who was phenomenal in Alias, by the way. He played Sidney Bristow's father. Did a great job. He's like the best actor in the show. Him and Brandon Routh really were actually good. Everybody else sucked. But he is having a drink with his counterpart, who I believe in Flash is white, isn't he?
Yeah.
Oh,
it's her, the one chick's fiance that she thought got burned up in the reactor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now he's black, inexplicably. But he's having a drink with him, trying to convince him to, like, why don't you come with me? And he's like, no, I'm going to stay here in 2016 because, you know, screw the future. And that's your old guy's job. You go take care of that. And he says, okay, well, cheers. And he roofies the black guy and says, you're coming with us anyway.
Awesome.
Loads his ass up in the car and goes to the meeting place. That was super awkward.
And then Mr. Brain Zapper was okay with it. Like, he just shows up, like, clearly half of you is unconscious. Whatever. Load up into our roller coaster time machine.
They made the reference that he was out, like, you know, he's zapping everybody. Even James said he was roofying everybody with his brain zapper. So everybody's just roofying everybody. And
DC, Legends of Roofies.
This is how we do things. So they all meet at the big gravel parking lot because it doesn't cost a lot when you're filming. You just find a gravel parking lot, and that's good for your budget. And at one point, he's like, are we being punked? Do people still say punked? And I was curious I'm that way.
I'm pretty sure I might have to punch someone in the face if they said that to me in a real setting.
So because I'm that kind of guy, I had to look up Google Analytics trending languages, and I looked up punked, P-U-N-K apostrophe D, how it's spelled. And Google Trends shows that term was last popular in June of 2012. That the top related term in related to punked was Justin Bieber. Just FYI. So moving on, we have our group. They're getting on the Wave Rider, which he then says very dramatically, like, nobody gives a shit about your ship. What they give a shit about is about the fact that they're going to time travel now. It's going to fall out crazy. They don't care about the name of your ship or how it works. So they get on. And then the one guy, I forget who it was. Oh, yeah, it was Captain Cold. I ain't footing it anywhere. And I was curious, so I looked up footing as a verb. When was that last trending online? And footing by countries of interest? France was number one. So obviously this guy's, whoever wrote that dialogue is from France, because the U.S. usage rated number 13 in countries that actually use that word in any kind of Google searching. So I was just curious. But then they get on the ship, and they're buckling in, and they're doing their thing, and they're pulling down the roller coaster shit, which you so accurately described it. And then Rip is going to talk to the group. Everybody's buckled in. They're all facing each other. And because that's how he does, he's still able to swivel his chair and talk to everybody from behind. Yes, that dramatic turn and talk to people. And, oh my God. Can I just say, Wentworth Miller, the guy who plays Captain Cold, the worst overactor in this group.
Oh, yeah. Like, I don't know what it is with that character or that role, but yeah, he's just – I really liked him in Prison Break Season 1. He was great.
The quality of his acting in this – he's bringing back Dinotopia, like when he was in that a long time ago. Like, I thought his partner, Heatwave, Dominic Purcell, I thought he was overacting, but I now think that he's playing his character flawlessly as like that's how he's supposed to be, and he's just 100% behind that writing. The professor, like, they travel through time. They go back to 1975, right? Because they got to go talk to a professor for some reason. So they go back to 1975.
Right.
And the old quantum physics professor, the other half of the Firestorm duo, is talking to Hawkman, Hawkgirl, and the time travel Dr. Ripoff. The fact they're explaining the fact that the reason why Vandal Savage lives forever is because he's able to, through some kind of ancient Egyptian curse.
Ugh, no.
Every time he kills the immortals, the immortal lovers,
Hawk
who
people.
They've been killed, what, was it 206 times? Or?
Yep.
Yeah, 206 times Vandal's killed them. Every time he kills them, he's able to take that immortality that they've expended or whatever and use it himself, and that's how he's able to still continue to live, so with some weird other language that they're using to make it sound like it makes sense. So the professor says, that's impossible. Wait a minute, Prof. Wait just a fucking minute. Do you remember who you are, where you are, and who you're with? Let's skim the list, dude. You can molecularly bond with another man to form a flying, fire-flinging superhero. You've seen a man run so fast he breaks timelines. You hang out with the Egyptian immortals and have traveled backwards through time yourself. And the little magic curse is impossible? I don't get it. I don't buy it.
Watching this past makes the first 15 minutes was impossible, and I don't know how you guys did it.
Oh my god, it just kept going. It got worse. So then the other, like the B group, right? So A group goes to go find this professor and learn some info. B group, consisting of your bad guys, who are your Captain Cold, Heatwave,
Assassin White Lady.
Yeah, White Canary.
Oh, White Canary, yeah.
And who else?
I think that was it, actually.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. Yeah. So they go to a bar, and then the one girl says, I'm gonna go get drunk and start dancing. Can you all tell me what happens next?
Does she get roofied?
No. She has a drink. She has a drink. Starts dancing by herself. All right. Biker knows her.
Oh.
So your obligatory bar fight, right? You can see it coming 1,000 miles away. So she's like, I got this. Even though the whole purpose of her taking a drink, walking into the middle of an open space of floor and dancing provocatively, she gets a little upset that somebody comes up to her and goes, hey, I'd try that out. So she first breaks his nose and throws him, you know, across the room, and he breaks a bottle, comes at her, and she's just starts destroying things and like, yeah, let's get into a fight. And so they start fighting, and then of course Dominic Purcell says something like, yeah, I love 1975. Like, just,
yeah,
it's so dumb. So you have your bar fight, and then you have another bad guy come onto the scene. It's a temporal bounty hunter.
Oh,
right?
Man.
So he comes, you know what his name was?
Kronos. Yeah.
She literally is time. They're not that creative, Dave. They named him Kronos.
I took a mythology class once. Kronos is the father of the gods.
I got some names. We're just going to call him Time. So Kronos starts shooting at the ship, which is cloaked, but he can see it anyway. So he's bombing at the ship. Black dude wakes up from being roofied. He refuses to leave anywhere, stays on the ship. Now, all of a sudden, you know, he's talking with Gideon. Gideon's like, oh, we're getting shot at. And then he's like, oh, no, what are we going to do? And Kronos is destroying my ship. And then everybody flies in to help, right? The entire squad of the Legends of Tomorrow open Kronos. And the ground is erupting from blaster, laser fire, and fireballs 20 yards away from him. From an aerial bombardment. Like, they're above him. Quite easy to hit him. Like, you can fly up to his face and unload. They're like, ugh. And it's like watching an old World War II movie where the strafing fire comes in from, like, 100 yards away. And then they just stop firing when it gets somewhat close to the target. That's what's happening.
Stormtrooper syndrome.
Shots.
The only Imperial troopers are so precise.
No, because it gets worse, because old time dude, Rip Hunter, whips out his laser pistol, which is just a revolver with some blue glowing lights in the chambers, and he shoots Kronos so powerfully, Kronos actually flies backward and falls down. Can you tell me if you think Rip Hunter shot again while he was down and just continued to shoot him? No. He lowered his gun, waited for Kronos to get up, and then raised his gun again, and then missed. Because that's how we do things. Because if we eliminate our villains right away, then we have no show. You didn't have a show to begin with. This is shit.
Also, why did he just use his date rape laser? Like, that seems way better than the... He just points it at you and pushes the presses the trigger, and then you just wake up hours later.
So, he's the name of the show is Legends of Tomorrow because of the line of bullshit he feeds them when he says, "I brought you guys forward in time, you specifically, because in our timeline, you are legends." So we've got our time, we've got our name for our show. They are the Legends of Tomorrow. Then he says, I lied. What? You're not legends. We looked up using our fancy time stuff and found that of all those, you guys were the least consequential. And if you died in this fight, it would mean the least amount of effect for the timeline.
Oh my god.
That makes sense. It's really messed up, but it makes sense. So
by telling them that they have the most minimal effect on the timeline, the CW just admitted that all of their shows are pointless and they're shit. That none of them matter to the greater DC universe, and go ahead and stop watching now. Ugh.
You know, according to the logic of the show, James, we can't even go back in time and stop ourselves from watching this.
God damn it. Then what fucking good is time travel?
But yeah, I think it's that time. We have... The hate fires are mighty. So, don't...
Yeah,
don't,
I'm not finishing that.
Yeah, don't... I can't... Don't... There's no reason that any of you should watch the show. Don't do it. Our viewers out there, Hunter's viewers, don't watch the show. So, yeah, that's it, man. It felt good to purge all that out. I don't think I'm going to die.
God.
We made other people watch our ring tape. But, tune in next time when we'll be on a regular-style show and we'll be talking about going to the cinema. The movie theater. The house of moving pictures, if you will. The movie theater experience, that kind of thing. What was your first thing? What do you enjoy? What do you hate? We're gonna cover those moving pictures.
Talk about right anybody right. Who's potentially ever walked out of a theater.
Yeah, exactly. There's fertile ground there for us to talk about.
Talk about my Willow experience.
Oh, yes. Save it. I look forward to it. And then, we'll send the show out here. I'm gonna pick a movie, and I'll do a quote from it, and then you follow up, and we'll keep going until someone can't. Memorable quotes only. Here we go.
All right.
I'll start, and then we'll just go James, Hunter, Adam, and then rotate like that.
Wait, oh, from the show.
Oh no, from any movie. We'll try this out as our.
Jesus! All right. Do they have to have anything to do with each other?
Well, it has to be all from the same movie.
Okay, all right.
It has to be. It can't just be like random line number 32. It has to be a memorable line. All right, here we go. I'll throw us a slow ball, an easy one. Down here, this is my dream. This is my wish, and it didn't come true. So I'm taking it back. I'm taking them all back.
Nope.
That was quick.
James is out. Hunter.
Nope.
Pictures of power.
Down here, it's our time down here, and it's all over the second we take a ride up Troy's bucket. Service back to you, Adam. Those two are out.
Same monologue, though? Oh, come on.
I mean, hold on. All right, you got one?
Oh, God, what was his monologue from the when he's chowing on the ice cream and they're interrogating him? Talking about vomiting all over. No, the pressure got to me.
But this is the worst. This one time, it's horrible, man. I went to the movies, and... I sat in the balcony, and I mixed up all this fake puke, and I leaned over the rail, and I made this noise like, and then I dumped over the side, and this part is horrible, man. All the people in the theater, they started getting sick and throwing up all over each other. I never felt so bad in my whole life.
Oh, that movie. Okay, I remember it now.
And by that movie...
I remember.
Goonies. All right, that's been two discussions. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, don't watch DC Legends of Tomorrow. We'll be right back.
my child. I did the podcast.
Dude, have you heard?
Oh God,
you need a plenary indulgence.
Here, take these 98 feces and nail them to your door.
Oh, my sweet Luther.
3 Hail Marys and 20 Bloody Marys, and call me in the morning.
30 last-minute game-winning touchdowns?
No, 3 Hail Marys and then 20 Bloody Marys.
Oh. Yes, they...
What's the game plan? So we know what we're lining up, Dave.
Dave.
It's gone.
Dave, believe in yourself. Your power will return.
I'm clearing the room.
You have to want to fly.
I think it worked, James. He came back.
Yes. Clap your hands. Believe.
Do it, Bastion. Call my name.
All right. I'll do
it. I will call your name.
I'll do it. Jesus Christ.
Moonchild.
And those are parts of my brain that I'll never get back.
Hey, that first movie was good.
If we're ever encoded now. That's right, some edges that you can't shake off.
That plasma scene... Plasma screen TV was left on too long, and that image is just burned into the background now.
Just forever a giant dick, just right on the screen.
For sale. Yep. One slightly used plasma television. $30, if you don't mind...
The dick shadow.
If you don't mind a large black penis burned into the screen.
It's a drinking game. Now whenever you pause it and it's lined up with somebody's mouth, everybody has to take a shot.
Watching a movie with the kids. Just watching a movie with the kids. Like, oh, pause the movie, honey. We all got to take a shot.
Time five.
Take your fucking shot, Ryan.
In the business, we call that a helicopter.
You spin me right round, baby.
On a sad note, that guy's dead now. Recently.
Oh. God damn it, 2016. Why is 2016 just killing all the celebrities?
Anyway, David Bowie.
Everything. This year needs to go away.
Alan Rickman. Like, we lost Alan Rickman, and Bill Cosby is still here.
Alan Rickman.
Can we trade?
I loved Bill Cosby till I found out he diddled, and I'm like, oh, now my hero. God damn it.
We call this a Cosby sweater.
Oh.
Where it's all over you and it looks bad?
No, but that's a good one. It's an actual move that I'm not going to explain, and I urge anybody we actually put this in listening to, don't look it up.
It involves pretty pebbles and no shame.
Way to look out for the viewers.
Again with these viewers.
Dang it, I keep on doing that. Okay, listeners.
And on that dark note, there's our end of the show cut.